This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 85 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Last year, when the Jaguars and Gus Bradley were struggling, I sent out a tweet that read, Bill Belichick could go 0-16 for 41 consecutive seasons and still have a better winning percentage than Gus Bradley. This week, I brought that tweet back from the dead. I Undertaker.gift that tweet. The new tweet read, Bill Belichick could go 0-16 for 52 consecutive seasons and still have a better winning percentage than Hugh Jackson. ICYMI, Sashi Brown is no longer the GM of the Browns. I'm frustrated and annoyed by that decision, for a lot of reasons. But instead of just reiterating thoughts that I've already talked about on this podcast about analytics and their place in football, I wanted to shift my attention to Hugh Jackson, who somehow, some way, is going to keep his job and continue to coach the Browns in 2018. Like I said, Bill Belichick could go winless for 52 consecutive seasons and still have a better winning percentage than Jackson. And you know why? Because Jackson today is 9-35 all-time as a head coach, and he's won one of 28 games as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I've seen a lot of takes going around social media that say, well, what do you want Hugh Jackson to do? He has no talent on that team, and he has no quarterback. I don't know, win more than one freaking game? Football is a game of variance, and for a lot of reasons, even the worst teams in the NFL can compete with the best ones. The any given Sunday notion is one that exists because it's true. Any team has at least some chance to beat another one on any given Sunday. Like if you go look at this weekend's slate, the biggest spread is New England minus 11 at Miami. New England is a massive favorite. We would expect New England to win this game and to win big. Even with that though, it's not like their win probability is 100%. Hell, it's not even close to 90%. Our algorithm at NumberFire has them as winners, but we're giving them about a 72% chance to win. And now some of you listening to me are saying, that's way too low, but it's not. It's really not. This is the way the NFL is and how the NFL works. This is the way sports work. No team is guaranteed a win or a loss during a given game. And that's what makes this Hugh Jackson thing just so unreal to me. You think the Browns' chances of winning have consistently been like 5% week in and week out? Of course not. And yet, the Browns are still winless this season, and they've still won just one game over their last two seasons. Yes, I'm annoyed that we won't see fully what this analytically thinking front office could have done. But I'm just as annoyed that Hugh Jackson gets a free pass for being a legitimately bad coach throughout this process. He's played around at the quarterback position, he's made awful in-game decisions, and he has the Browns without a win through 12 games. This is legitimately hard to do, you guys. It's hard for a coach to be this bad given general win probabilities in football. And yet he gets a pass and the front office doesn't? It's ridiculous. Today's a mailbag show, but before we get to the questions, I just wanted to send a reminder that Jim Sonnes, Brandon Gadula, and yours truly from NumberFire.com are playing against FanDuel Friends Mode commissioners in the NumberFire Showdown this week and moving forward. To qualify, just be a FanDuel Friends Mode League commissioner and have your contest run for cash. That gets you into the $1,000 commish free play the next week. Finish in the top three in the free play, and you'll take on me, Brandon, and Jim the following week. If you win, you get $1,000 or more. But if one of us experts wins, we don't get anything, and FanDuel adds $500 to next week's prize pool until a commish claims it. This week's prize is back down to $1,000 because we, the experts, lost our first contest in over a month this past week thanks to Jared Cook's dud against the Giants. It was brutal. If you want to learn more about how you can play against me in this very special FanDuel contest, you can visit FanDuel.com/NumberFireShowdown. That's FanDuel.com/NumberFireShowdown. All right, let's get to these questions. This first one's from Twitter, @Chris_Quick. How do you balance overall stats versus recent performance? If a player is due for positive regression and he's in a tremendous matchup, but you've seen them look terrible for the past few weeks, what do you do? So this is a good question and one that I'm sure a lot of people have. First, I think we should quickly revisit regression and what it all means. I won't bore you with a long explanation because I've talked about this so many times on this podcast, but it's important to remember that regression doesn't mean an overcorrection. It just means that a player is performing at a far lower or a far higher level than he should be performing at, so eventually he'll regress to a mean and start performing better or worse. So with your example, you ask if a player is due for positive regression and he's in a tremendous matchup, What do you do? Well, that's a great spot for that player, especially from a daily fantasy perspective. And the reason I say that is because when players perform poorly, the public tends to fade those players. Like, fewer and fewer people are playing Kareem Hunt each week, for instance, but Hunt does have positive regression coming, and he's in a good matchup this week against the Raiders. That's what kind of makes him an ideal GPP play. Because not only do you know that his production isn't exactly all on him and that he should have more fantasy points scored over the second half of the season than he does, but because of those poor performances, you have a group of people who aren't going to play him. But I'd also like to point out that good matchups present more opportunity, and more opportunity naturally means an easier time for that regression to hit. Like, let's just pretend that a wide receiver has played 8 straight games against the Jacksonville Jaguars. In those games, this wide receiver has 0 touchdowns, but he's averaged 15 targets per game, he has over 200 air yards per contest, and he's seeing at least one red zone look per game as well. You would be calling for that dude to regress, or positively regress. If he hasn't scored, but he's seeing 15 targets per game, that's not normal. But against the Jacksonville secondary, it's a little bit, and I stress a little bit, more believable. Now, this week, that player hypothetically gets the Buccaneers. You can look at that dude and see that all of his peripherals are there, but he hasn't found the end zone. People may be off of that player because he hasn't performed. He hasn't scored. His fantasy points total does not look that great. But you know better because Jacksonville's really good, and this type of odd production can't be sustained forever. So that's sort of how I look at it. I look at recent schedule, I find reasons why things are happening, and I try to put context around all of the regression talk that gets thrown around. Because that's important. Strength of opponent is important when talking about regression. And once you start to piece things together, you come to the conclusion as to whether or not you should start or sit a player. This next one is an email from Pete. He says, I'm interested in changing things up in our league as we've now had the situation 2 years in a row where a team misses the playoffs despite having a very high point total because they face the hardest schedule. We have a 10-team league where 6 make it to the playoffs. Is there some way to adjust for strength of schedule? Maybe top 4 teams based on record get in, and the last 2 is a more complicated algorithm based on adjusted win-loss or total points. Open to your thoughts. Thanks. I don't think it needs to be this complicated, Pete. You don't need some complicated algorithm to figure out who makes your fantasy football playoffs. I've talked about this before, but in a league where 6 teams make the playoffs, I like the first 4 or 5 seeds to be determined by overall record, and then the final seed to just be the most points scored that's not in based on those records. That way, even if you had horrible matchup luck, if your team was good enough, it'll be in. It's really just that simple, and most if not all platforms that you play on now allow you to adjust playoff seeding. This next one's from Twitter, at Jimmy2Lips. How high will Alvin Kamara be drafted next season? I got like 45 questions over the last week talking about where Alvin Kamara would be drafted in 2018. If Kamara keeps this up through the end of the year, then I think that he'll be a top half first round pick next year pretty easily. You have to think that Le'Veon Bell, as long as he's a Steeler, will be there. Antonio Brown will be a top pick. And then you have Todd Gurley, probably David Johnson. And I think that you can throw in Ezekiel Elliott in there as well. But Alvin Kamara is going to be considered by folks right after that group, I would assume. And to be honest, as much as I love what Alvin Kamara is doing and how good he is, as of right now, he'll probably be someone that I won't invest heavily in just because of the volume and regression. Some of you may say, he's just really good, and really good players score and generate big plays, and you're not totally wrong. But his efficiency is so ridiculously high that it's impossible to sustain that efficiency. It would be really, really tough for me to draft him in the top half of the first round when those other high-volume running backs are there. But fortunately, we have an entire offseason to discuss this. This next one's an email from Mark. He says, hey JJ, over the last few years, I've built and maintained my own projections model, and every year I look back and find myself disappointed in how I've projected rookie prospects. Are there any stats and trends that I should emphasize or avoid when projecting rookies? Mark. I think the main thing to remember is that volume is going to drive everything in any sort of model. And you're layering things with rookies that you aren't for non-rookies when projecting opportunity, because opportunity comes from historical evidence, which includes things like performance, and then how coaches have used players in the past. And you don't have that luxury of that evidence with rookies. And to be honest with you guys, this is partially why projection shouldn't be the end-all for player evaluation and how you draft. Some rookies emerge due to crummy situations ahead of them on the depth chart, which aren't always going to be obvious with projections, or even injuries and trades. Like when Alvin Kamara emerged this year, he probably didn't rank high in most projection models because most of those models had Adrian Peterson getting a lot of looks. You're not looking at the variance or all the possible outcomes that could go down. And with late round picks in fantasy football, you often have to tell yourself a story as to how they become a star or even a usable asset in fantasy football. This is just inherently what's difficult with rookies. Most non-obvious late round rookies who break out, broke out because of the things that your model won't be able to capture. So there may be a little confirmation bias at work here when you say that your model does a bad job with rookies. A lot of models do a bad job with rookies. But generally speaking, most rookies don't break out and have super relevant fantasy football seasons. Regardless though, I think having a process in evaluating rookies is important to go along with this, like looking at production profiles and measurables to find good talent. And this goes along with reading between the lines and seeing what types of actions teams are taking. The example I always use with this is the Chiefs trading up to get Kareem Hunt. When they did that, that told me that they really liked him and that they didn't necessarily see Spencer Ware as their lead back. Now, obviously, Spencer Ware went down, but I would guess that my model gave more love to Kareem Hunt even before that injury than most models. But overall, you're not alone with rookies, man, especially from a redraft perspective where you're not able to capture their whole career. They're very difficult to project. That even goes for actual scouts at the NFL level. This next one is from @BaldwinInc367. What are the biggest strategy shifts from regular season to the fantasy football playoffs? I've actually got another playoff-related question to get to in a second, but I wanted to keep this one in the mailbag because so many people are asking me start sits this week with the caveat, keep in mind, it's the playoffs, must win. I totally get it, guys. The fantasy football playoffs bring a lot of anxiety. With that being said, your goal is to still build the optimal lineup. Nothing changes. And it's not like the NFL players that you're using in your lineup give any craps that it's your fantasy football playoff. Just do you. Do what got you there. If you've been streaming effectively, keep streaming. If you've been balancing your roster well, keep balancing your roster well. Don't overthink it, because that's when you make suboptimal decisions. This next one was from @AndrewJGargano. Any advice for what teams with first round buys should be looking to do this week? So just to add what I was talking about, when it comes specifically to lineup decisions, I don't change anything. But if you have a buy, you should be prepping for week 15 right now. You have an advantage in that you can look at week 15 matchups and find something like a streaming defense or a quarterback when other teams are playing for now. And on top of this, guys, drop your kicker this week so that you have that extra bench spot for a flyer, whether that's someone who could break out over the next few weeks or just a handcuff. It's very useful to have that extra bench spot since you don't actually need a kicker this week. This last question is from @ParkingMartian. What is your view of picking up and playing the competing defense to your quarterback? For instance, Cam faces the very tough Vikings D this week. Is this bad? I'm assuming this question means playing a defense that's facing your quarterback, and in general, I would try to avoid this. It's a negative correlation move, because obviously when your quarterback does well, then that defense does not, and vice versa. Now, there are certainly instances where this can pan out, because points allowed only goes so far when it comes to fantasy football defensive scoring. You really want sacks and turnovers with your defense. But again, sacks generally mean that things aren't going well for an opposing offense, and turnovers are obviously worse than that too. And I will say, I feel stronger about this negative correlation with quarterback than other positions in season long. Because quarterbacks control so much of a game and an entire offense, it's very easy to have a direct correlation between a quarterback doing well and a defense not doing well, and again, vice versa. Meanwhile, you can have a running back go off and the defense still be viable because quarterbacks are going to turn the ball over more than running backs, and a running back can do well while the defense does too. Though that's not certainly a correlation that I would strive to have in my lineup. And regarding Cam Newton this week, as I talked about on my Start Sit podcast yesterday, I really don't like him, and I think that you can stream players over him in this matchup. That'll be it for this week's mailbag, though. I appreciate you guys listening. As always, if you've yet to subscribe to this show, please do so by going to iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And don't forget to leave a rating and review on iTunes, guys. I'll be picking a random reviewer out each month, and that person then goes on to win a free NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. Thanks, guys. Good luck in your playoffs, and I'll talk to you in week 15.